we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Well, last week we had an important event over in Helsinki with Dr. Asim Mahatra, a world-renowned cardiologist out of London, giving testimony before the Supreme Court, as well as we have, once again, our hero of heroes in the U.S. Congress, Senator Ron Johnson, giving a testimony before, not testimony, but an interview with the New American, and very insightful interviews and testimonies. Jordan, what did you think about this past week's events?
So I think as we were talking about earlier, when we were kind of prepping for this, Stuart, it is somewhat hard for us to kind of see things playing out as obviously as they are, mainly because in some ways, a lot of the things that are happening should have been known a long time ago, but we already knew about. So even his testimony itself, I think, is fascinating. I will say it's interesting. He did reveal who the or what school the British person that called him as a whistleblower was, and it was at that little known school, University of Oxford. It is as more and more data accumulates, it becomes harder and harder for the average person to understand why this wasn't discussed or revealed earlier. Again, most of the dates that he's talking about, even in his testimony, are now almost 3 years ago. And so to the average person, that seems like in today's world, this shouldn't have taken 3 years to get a testimony or basically a deposition in a sense for to the powers that be in Europe. It also goes along with the fact that I think our institutions, really in many areas of society, are lagging in terms of their trust, and I would argue, for a good reason. But our medical institution and our NIH, our CDC, our FDA, those institutions that have historically placed themselves above politics, not that they've done it terribly well over the years, but at least they had a modicum of some independence, are being revealed for what they are now and maybe for what they have always been. They just disguised it well. Yeah. And that is, they are complete biased bodies that are unapologetically on one side of an issue, regardless of the facts that are revealed.
Yeah. So I thought that was probably the best example of how public health we thought operated, where after the release of the shots and after they mandate the shots in the UK, Mahatra gets in touch with a world-renowned expert at Oxford, and within a month, they withdraw the mandates. That's the first evidence I've heard of reason being applied over the last 4 years.
Yeah. And so, but again, I don't think they gave a reason.
Right.
The reason is much more revealing. And that reason is that, these things are dangerous. Not that we want to be flexible and allow people not to get these shots. But these shots are still being required, from the State Department for immigration, for the average person who wants to, become a valid citizen of the U.S. It's part of the requirement. It's still, for a lot of universities, part of the requirement. And so, we're just looking at, bodies that continue to spout, facts that aren't facts anymore. In fact, they're They're the opposite. Right. They just aren't true. So I think Asim Malhotra is a good example. He's always been on the leading edge of a lot of things. I think from even understanding, how food and the food impacts that we have had for a long time in terms of what's in our diet and how maybe the lipid hypothesis is not exactly the perfect hypothesis to describe everything, which it's not. We know that. He's a good example of somebody who's outside the box. So it was interesting this morning. I was listening to a podcast. It's from Russ Roberts, and Russ Roberts at the Econ Institute. And it's actually this Oxford guy kind of arguing against whether AI will replace humans. And I think it's an interesting argument because I think a lot of the people on the AI side are, think that they're going to be able to do everything. But the problem is he was using some examples like if an AI language learning model had access to all the available information in the written text at the same time that Galileo was saying that the Earth revolves around the sun rather than the sun around the Earth. Galileo, if he would have used that chat GPT for that information, he would have been told that he's an idiot for even considering it. In the same way he used the example of the Wright brothers, it would have been the same thing. The Wright brothers, whether it was the Lord Kelvin, who was the head of the Royal Scientific Society, and other people at all these, the written record said that men can't fly, meaning that there was not going to be the ability for. But it takes people that utilize what God's given us, which is very different than all available factual data. And by the way, factual data meaning the facts as they are revealed currently. And so I think I'm not saying that there is no facts, but a lot of times the facts that we have are facts of observation that are observed by men that are fallible. And because of that, those facts are not always correct. They are the factual record. And in fact, if without the factual record being corrected by God's given ability for our brain to think beyond what's currently written down and assumed as fact, we wouldn't progress that much. So I know this sounds like a little bit of a, but I think that's somewhat what's happening in even our medical institutions is it's this very circular reasoning where we are saying that this happens and it happens because somebody said it happened, even though when they said it happened, they didn't have all the information they needed to say that. And I think we have to get back to where what makes us unique as humans and what has us outside the institutions that now all they do is navel gaze at their peer-reviewed data is that that's kind of the end of progress. And right. I think we see that.
Yeah, there's no doubt that this whole COVID catastrophe has revealed a lot about the fallibility of mankind, of humankind, and that this AI stuff is inserting itself at the most opportune time. And it's ignoring what is so obvious is that men have souls. It's a whole different discussion. But the fact is that the people that have been running this show for the last 4 years, with the decades of planning before, really had lost sight of that themselves, and that led them to such horrible conclusions and actions that we've all had to suffer through. But it doesn't ignore the reality, like they have tried to do, that there is a spirit within us, a soul that is outside of the intellectual. And that's what I've been maintaining the last 3 or 4 years, is that this is not an intellectual trap we're in. It is a spiritual trap, because these people that cannot see what is right before their eyes, there are doctors that are a lot smarter than I that have not been able to see it. Well, that's not intellectual. It is an awareness, an ability to see something that you will not allow yourself to see in their case. That's interesting. I'd shoot that over to me. I'd love to listen to it. But So after we play the Mahatra interview and go through that, you wanted to also go through the New American interview with Senator Johnson.
Yeah, and I think this is a good interview because it kind of really reveals somebody at, you know, Senator Johnson, obviously, is one of 100 senators in the U.S. He's got a lot of power, but he is unable to get, basically kind of a small modicum of support for what has gone so wrong in our response to COVID, where COVID came from, and the harms of the shots, which I think somewhat has to do with how corrupted our institutions are and how influenced they are by the medical industrial complex. I think a lot of them would say it to him privately that there's an issue, but they've got to look out for their next election. So to me, it's a good view of somebody who's at least open-minded and has been an advocate for not only getting this information out there, but an advocate for people that have been harmed, which I think there's not enough of.
Yep. So let's go. I will go into the Mahatra interview or testimony, if you'll afterwards follow that up with Johnson's in the third segment.
Sounds perfect. All right. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse. Always one move ahead.
The Wellness Company shares your values and fights for medical freedom. They put patients before profits and follow medical science, not political science like doctors on the left. Their chief medical board, which includes Dr. Peter McCullough, are the makers of the incredible American-made high-quality spike formula. If you worry about spike proteins, go to twc.health and use promo code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount. Once again, that's twc.health, promo code OUTLOUD.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
So welcome back. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse. For the next segment, what we're going to do is go through a recent interview that the New American had with Ron Johnson. And I think he did an excellent job of going through a lot of just the basic data that's available to counter the narrative. But most importantly, he makes a big point of this throughout, that it is still amazing to him that very few people are coming to help others. So with that, here's Senator Ron Johnson.
Well, first of all, nothing about our response to COVID made sense to me. I held my first hearing as chairman of Homeland Security Governmental Affairs with Scott Gottlieb, Julie Gerberding. And in that hearing, I found out that we really don't produce the active pharmaceutical ingredients or the precursor chemicals for drugs, which is a huge vulnerability, which we've done nothing to address. That was in February of 2020. Then when I started hearing about this, 15-day shutdown to flatten the curve, I certainly questioned the wisdom of shutting down the American economy. And I was actually on a phone conference with Anthony Fauci, and I think President Trump might have been on it, but members of his administration are on it. And as a senator, you get to ask one question. The question I asked Dr. Fauci is, you know, Dr. Fauci, are you contemplating the economic devastation of what you're suggesting here in terms of economic shutdowns? And his reply to me was, Senator, that's, you know, economic concerns are somebody else's department, not mine. And I thought that was a rather callous and cavalier attitude. So, you know, I went public and made the comment that, you know, we tragically lose tens of thousands of Americans on the highways every year, but we don't shut down the highway. Our transportation system, we can't. We couldn't shut down the American economy.
So this is Jordan Vaughn again, but I think that is a great point. I think that is a pretty good analysis of how we consider the harms versus the benefits. I think, again, going back to the benefits of a society fully working, including employment, productivity, all the things that go along with research, versus just shutting it down and waiting for some time in the future for things to happen. A good example would be, yes, I mean, we're always looking for safer ways to transport human beings, but it is not, we don't do that and shut down the current system until we find it. I think that's another good example here that Senator Ron Johnson had.
And so I made that that comment, and then Anthony Fauci from the podium in a briefing room, you know, said, oh, that comment's way out there, like I'm some kind of crazy man. I think, you know, what I proposed was entirely reasonable. It was a very good analogy. And because they shut down the economy, and so many governors took that, the power that they seized, okay, I think they enjoyed that control over the population, and the economic devastation is just incalculable. I mean, people's lives were ruined and destroyed by the shutdowns, and I knew they would be. So I was opposed to that, but then, you know, just questioning the fear-mongering. You know, we had very early on with Johnny Unitas a pretty good research project, you can call it, with the Diamond Princess Cruise, where they had an outbreak of COVID, and he analyzed the results of that, where, you know, if you were elderly, you know, COVID was something you need to be concerned about if you had certain comorbidities. But if you were young, if you were healthy, you know, COVID was probably not going to be a very devastating disease for you. So right there, that certainly eased my concerns. And again, listen, I had the same fear as the rest of the population did. We saw the pictures coming out of China with the, you know, officials in moon suits, and I mean, doctors, you know, dying, and this was scary. I mean, I understand that, but, you know, once you start gathering information, that eased my concern. Now that we had the experience with the Princess Cruise, so I held a hearing in May with Johnny Unitas, other experts. Scott Atlas was part of that panel. Pierre Corey was talking about corticosteroids, but I think my main point there is COVID is not going to be. It's not SARS. It's not MERS. It's not Ebola. Early indications it might be, you know, have a similar infection fatality rate as a bad flu season. You know, the Oxford Evidence-Based Medicine Center, or Center for Evidence-Based Medicine, was coming out with you know, infection case fatality rates, you know, far lower than, you know, certainly SARS and MERS. So again, I was trying to put things in perspective, hoping that our government in the U.S. and globally wouldn't overreact to this. And unfortunately, I wasn't successful. But I also, as soon as I heard of a potential treatment for it, hydroxychloroquine, you know, I hopped on that right away. If it is an effective treatment, will we have enough doses? I mean, do we have the manufacturing capability to just snuff this pandemic out with effective treatment? Of course, Donald Trump mentioned it, and all of a sudden, you couldn't even talk about hydroxychloroquine without being labeled a conspiracy theorist. They sabotaged the use of hydroxychloroquine. They sabotaged the use of ivermectin. They vilified Pierre Corey about corticosteroids until a study out of England said that, no, dexamethasone, which is a corticosteroid, actually does work. So they kind of reversed course on that. But it didn't make sense. I mean, the whole point of early detection, and this is a fundamental medicine, you detect a disease early so you can offer early treatment to have a better outcome. that wasn't followed here. We did all this testing for what purpose? What, once you found out that you had COVID, you were just told to go home, do nothing, maybe take a Tylenol or two, and hope you didn't get so sick that you turned blue that you'd have to go into the hospital and be abused in the hospital. You know, have remdesivir pumped in your arm that had no scientific basis for being used whatsoever. A ventilator, 90% of people put on ventilators never got off them, okay? So again, none of this made sense whatsoever, except in the context of the global movement toward vaccines and a vaccine solution, which is what all this, you know, all this bioweapon research was justified on the basis of, is we're going to create deadly viruses so that we can develop a countermeasure just in case somebody produces. It's literally crazy what has all been happening. So again, there's so much that doesn't make sense other than in the context of, you know, there was bioweapon research going on. It's pretty obvious, I think, that this, you know, the coronavirus was released from labs in some way, shape, or form, probably in Wuhan. Anthony Fauci obviously was covering up his involvement. But you also have to understand, it wasn't just Anthony Fauci's NIH and NIAID agency that was involved in funding this. Fauci's group, NIH, provided about $14 million worth of funding to Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance. The Defense Department provided $42 million. USAID, Bobby Kennedy calls that a CIA cutter. I don't dispute that. $53 million of funding. And it is interesting that the only federal agency that is, or one of them, that is certainly clinging to this sprang from nature is the one agency that probably knows more about bioweapons research, how we're funding it, what the implications could be. That'd be the CIA. And now we find out that, was it 6 of the 7 analysts who were tasked with determining is this, you know, man-made or sprang from nature, that they thought it was man-made, a lab leak, and then they were bribed to change their opinion. Mm-hmm. So again, there's just so much, there's so much corruption that's already been revealed, you know, so much cover-up that we're already seeing. And the fact of the matter is, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg here. We're just merely scratching the surface of the corruption within these agencies.
And again, I mean, this is coming from a powerful senator who is being honest about what he's seen around him. And for the most part, I would say he's seeing a lot more than you or I. And given that, I think the weight of what he's talking about is quite considerable. I'm hopeful that he is, you know, not 100% correct. He is actually 100% correct on most of the things here. I mean, I agree with him, I guess, what I'd say. I don't, you know for sure, but I think that he is revealing things that are what we assumed to begin with.
But you're one of the few who is actually trying to do something about it. Senator, when and why have you decided to hold hearings on COVID vaccine injuries and mechanisms of harm and broader issues related to the pandemic?
Nobody else was doing it. I mean, again, we have a health committee, you know, health, education, labor, pensions. I mean, you would think that committee would have been holding hearings on what could we do to respond to the pandemic. You would have thought they were the ones that chairman, that ranking member, that those committee members would have been holding the hearings on, you know, how serious the disease is this? Is it MERS? Is it SARS? Is it Ebola? What about molecules, current drugs, generic drugs that could be used to treat this? I mean, what are we doing to treat it? You know, why isn't there an Operation Warp Speed on treatment versus all of our efforts toward vaccines? So it just didn't make sense. And, you know, so I held hearings on early treatment. I held a hearing on hydroxychloroquine because there was meta-analysis. I mean, this is, you know, Harvey Risch, you know, epidemiologist from Harvard. It was no slouch. I mean, an eminently qualified individual. He's looking at the data on hydroxychloroquine. So this stuff works. You know, Pierre Corey brought his manuscript in a month later on ivermectin. You know, again, the meta-analysis there, this was effective. And by the way, because I was aware of this, I had so many people that had COVID, sometimes pretty serious cases, asked me, is there a doctor? So I would refer them to doctors who had the courage and compassion to treat people. And I heard story after story of just miraculous turnaround. people couldn't breathe, and literally within hours, their breathing restrictions were, you know, lifted. They could start breathing again. So again, I'm thoroughly convinced, you know, particularly ivermectin, once you got sick, was pretty darn effective. And I think hydroxychloroquine early on too. I mean, again, but again, it was all sabotaged.
Which is such a stark contrast to the effects of the vaccines. So when did you become aware of the harms that they were causing? Well, and they were advertised as miracle of the modern medicine.
Well, because I was holding these hearings, again, as chairman of Homeland Security Government Affairs, this is really not, you know, this isn't an area that the committee would normally be delving into, but nobody else was doing it. But because of that, I was being connected to this global network of just eminently qualified doctors and medical researchers had a completely different take on the coronavirus. One of those individuals was Dr. Michael Yeadon, who worked for Pfizer for 30 years. He retired as their vice president of research. His background is in toxicology. Left on really good terms. He started his own bio company, cooperated, did joint venture, I think, with Pfizer. So, I mean, he's obviously steeped in the pharmaceutical industry. But when he heard what his colleagues were contemplating with the vaccine, I mean, he literally was beside himself. And I talked to him pretty early on. I think probably about October 2020 was my first contact with him. He said, you know, Ron, there's a long list of ingredients that we don't put in injectables because they're toxic to the body. So I was educated with all these people, all these health ministers. I know what they know. I know they're lying to us. I know they know they're lying to us. And he's got a list of all the lies told in COVID. I mean, for example, that it was going to stay in our arm. Mm-hmm. I mean, the mRNA, which is not true mRNA, which does degrade very rapidly. This is modified to not degrade. So it circulates in the body for months, we know. But again, that was supposed to stay in the arm. But no, it was encapsulated in the lipid nanoparticle, which is designed to permeate difficult to permeate barriers, like the blood-brain barrier. So they knew, and they had studies on this with rats. The Japanese regulators, through FOIA, determined this, that the lipid nanoparticle distributed all over the body, concentrated in things like ovaries, the adrenal glands. Okay, so again, you're taking a crapshoot, but we relied to that this was going to stay right there. mRNA is going to degrade so quickly. Your body's going to create these antibodies and move on. Is a total lie. And they knew it was a lie. And so it was, you know, basically, you know, his tutoring of me in terms of the science of what they were contemplating, you know, his concern. But anyway, he said he couldn't believe the fact that his colleagues were going to produce an injection that is going to have the body produce its own toxin. You don't put toxins in injectables. You certainly aren't going to design something that's going to create a toxin or have the body create its own toxin. It's not a traditional vaccine. You know, normally vaccines are, you know, a dead virus or, you know, it's something that really can't harm you. That's not what this is. And that's why we're seeing all these harms.
I do feel like he's brilliantly and succinctly stated all the things that Stuart and I have been talking about for quite a long time. Which is, I mean, he goes on to state, obviously, that they knew it, which obviously I don't know what was in these. I don't know the actual heart of these men and what they actually knew when they were making this. But Michael Yeadon did, and Michael Yeadon stating that these people knew what they were doing and that the harms that it would cause is such an important and revealing aspect to what was going on. And again, as me and Stuart have often said, this was more than just a fact versus non-fact type battle. It seemed to take on almost a spiritual battle in some ways. And I think that's where I think it's kind of unstated here, but it seems like some people thought they would do things that they wouldn't normally do in the name of something that is quite evil.
So, again, I was just made aware of the dangers of the vaccine. And I was made aware of how our federal health officials, global health officials were just bold-faced lying to the public about this. Well, as chairman of Homeland Security, it is the Senate Oversight Committee. You know, we encourage whistleblowers. And so we encourage people to tell their stories. So that's the mere, you know, the purpose behind that. But I mean, there are so many stories, you know, outside of people that have contacted me, but they're just being ignored. I mean, I'd never ever heard of the condition SADS. I've heard of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, but all of a sudden in 2021, sudden adult death syndrome. And nobody's asking the question, well, did we do something different in 2021? Is there something changed in public health that might have all of a sudden been the cause of these people, you know, young, healthy people just dropping dead on you know, sports fields or, you know, in their sleep? Again, it's insane. And when you've got, you know, safety surveillance systems from our federal agencies that they were touting, by the way, in October of 2020, before they got the emergency use authorization, they, you know, they had a big long seminar. They're talking about, you know, VAERS is an excellent safety surveillance system. You know, we start seeing signals here. Somebody loses a couple of days worth of work. We're going to be on the phone and find out exactly what's happening to them. That's total BS. So when those safety systems were, I started monitoring the way because I was concerned about the vaccine. When they started screaming safety signals at federal officials, I started asking questions. I talked to Francis Collins, I think in April of 2021. And this is where there are a few thousand deaths on VAERS. 46% of those deaths were occurring on the day of vaccination within 2 days. I know VAERS doesn't prove causation. That's a pretty alarming correlation, right? VAERS, the other problem with it, it understates the number of adverse events. Okay, so we're seeing these early safety signals. So in person, I'm asking Francis Collins, well, what are you doing about this? He said, well, Senator, you know, we've assigned 6 and attributed that to the J&J vaccine. But that's it. I mean, as the other thousands of deaths, you know, Senator, people die. Totally cavalier, totally brazen. And that continues to be the attitude of our federal health agencies. Again, it's safe and effective. They'll never stop saying that on any vaccine.
You've been bombarding the HHS with your inquiries about two topics, the so-called hot lots of the vaccines, and the other is their standard operational practices right. for analyzing adverse effects. Can you talk about how cooperative they've been with you and providing in this kind of information that you were asking for?
It's a short answer. They've been completely uncooperative. Completely uncooperative. We actually have evidence of an email we got through I think a FOIA request where they got one of my oversight letters. They already had a standard form response to me. Yeah, I mean, that's how unserious they're taking all this. Now, to the extent that they're covering it up, so no, it's a joke, which is why I keep writing letters. And unfortunately, we don't have Democrats in the Senate that are particularly interested in doing oversight on this. I mean, quite honestly, even the House, the subcommittee on the, you know, coronavirus pandemic, populated by a lot of doctors, part of the, you know, I think card carrying members of the medical establishment, they recommended the vaccine to their constituents. They don't want to see that there's harm. They don't want to have to confront the possibility that what they recommended to their constituents or their patients might have harmed them or potentially result in their death. So that's what we're up against. We're up against the basic human tendency to never admit you are wrong. Plus, the body count's way too high. They can't afford to admit they're wrong. And unfortunately, the COVID cartel, it's the Biden administration, the federal health agencies, who've been thoroughly captured by Big Pharma, as well as the media and the social media companies. I mean, that is the COVID cartel. They're the ones that were censoring people like myself. They've got the power to make it almost impossible to prove that they are wrong.
So with that, I think that is a dynamic interview that was done. I think he is succinct. I think he lays out a case. I would not want to be person standing trial before Ron Johnson because he has all the goods. I do think the last comment about why a bunch of doctors, even in the Senate or the House, are not interested. It is. I mean, I think it is because they have gone out and stated that this was all good for all their constituents. And as medical doctors, they had an extra level of confidence in these things. And to be wrong is difficult. I'm not always right. Stuart's not always right. But if you are unable to be wrong, that's where you get in real trouble. And I think
That's one of the problems with our current COVID cartel, as Ron Johnson would state that. And with that, this again is Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead.
$58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off. Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutLoud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutLoud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutLoud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX. Because it works.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Be a part of a revolutionary new healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interests of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Jordan Vaughn on iHeartRadio. Thank you for joining us again this week. This is the final segment this week. It's a very interesting one. Riveting testimony at the end of last week in Helsinki, and it was by Dr. Asim Mahatra. Now, this guy is a world-renowned cardiologist out of London. His father, like before him, was a well-renowned doctor who succumbed to the vaccine. Dr. Asim Mahatra was a big advocate for the shots. He was on the national news as a well-respected, nationally known doctor, and he was advocating for these shots from the beginning. And then, unfortunately, his father's death from the shot alerted him that there was something really bad going on. And he testified for 2 hours in Helsinki last week, and it was riveting. What we're going to do, what I'm going to do in this segment, is clip out about 8 or 10 minutes of the testimony and kind of fill in the gaps, if you will. And I'm going to say several of the things that he talks about. Of course, he goes through his pedigree. And he said at the beginning, I would like to summarize three psychological barriers before I get into my detailed account of what I was involved in regards to the COVID vaccine. The first psychological barrier is one of fear. And many of us, understandably, and I still remember from early on in the pandemic, we were all scared. We did not know what we were dealing with. The issue of fear is that when people and populations are in a state of fear, we are less likely to engage in critical thinking and we are more likely to be compliant. And it is super important. Last week we did a breakdown of Tucker Carlson's interview with Dr. Michael Nels of Germany in his best-selling book, The Indoctrinated Brain, and he goes into it in detail. I'd once again encourage you to listen to that show that we did last week. But so this, he's getting into what has been going on. And he talked about there was a poll done in the summer of 2020 in America, and Democratic voters believed that there was over 50% increased risk of dying from the COVID if you got it. And greater than 20% of Republicans. But this fear was all-encompassing. And the second barrier, and this is Dr. Mahatra's testimony, he says the second barrier to the truth, which I think is very relevant to the situation we find ourselves in now, is what is called willful blindness. All of us are vulnerable to this. Turn a blind eye to the truth in order to feel safe, avoid conflict, reduce anxiety, and to protect prestige and fragile egos. On an institutional level, some great examples of willful blindness include Hollywood, Harvey Weinstein, the Catholic Church, and child molestation. I believe the current situation we find ourselves in, with much of the mainstream narrative and the medical establishment and policymakers not acknowledging quite horrific, serious, and common harms from this vaccine, is another example of willful blindness. And I also say this with full empathy, because I was one of those people that was for a very long time willfully blind to the harms of the COVID vaccine. He was asked early on by in 2021 by the British Good Morning Britain director, a lady, Mrs. Shanda, if he would come on the Good Morning Britain and speak about it. And he wanted to talk about, and he addressed the vaccine hesitancy. And he reassured the public that these, despite these figures of everything we do in medicine, traditional vaccines are among the safest, for which he still believes that traditional vaccines are still the safest. But I'm going to start playing this one-minute clip here of his testimony that is an important part of what he gets to throughout his 2 hours.
A few months later, in April 2021, I met with a colleague and friend of mine who I regard as one of the brightest cardiologists in the United Kingdom. I was surprised when he told me that he had not taken the COVID vaccine. He explained to me that he had concerns because he had seen in the supplementary appendix of Pfizer's original trial that there were 4 cardiac arrests in the vaccine group and only 1 in the placebo. These numbers were small, and did not reach statistical significance, so this could be random chance. Or, his concern was it could represent a signal of problems in the future. And if this was the case, we are going to have a huge problem. He said he'd rather wait and see what happens before taking the vaccine.
Well, that was a pretty good idea on his part to wait and see, because the signal was already there in the studies. And more evidence about that has come out in the last year and a half. Early on, they knew, they hid, Pfizer, Moderna, and the other ones hid a lot of the safety signal data. And we've talked about that countless times. But in July of 21, his father, a 73-year-old healthy guy, dies from a heart attack. And it took 30 minutes for the ambulance to get to him, to his apartment, and save him. And so 2 weeks after his death, the deputy chief nurse of NHS England, a governmental health body, called Dr. Mahatra. And he says, she was very upset. She knew my father very well, and she was crying. And she told me, Asim, there's something I need to tell you. She, in effect, told me that throughout the country for the last 2 months prior to my father's death, once again, that was at the end of July of 21, in most regions of the UK, ambulances were not getting to patients in time for heart attacks and cardiac arrest. Just horrific.
And there had been a deliberate, and I will use these words because I mentioned it before, a cover-up involving the government and the Department of Health to withhold this information from doctors and the public. I worked with an investigative journalist with the I newspaper in the UK to write an article and a news story that became BBC News headlines a few months later, exposing this. Just before I exposed this, I messaged a professor of cardiology who I trust in the UK. He has a leadership role, to explain to him what had happened and what I was about to do. I have text message evidence of this. He told me not to do this because it would make me enemies. I explained to him that I had a duty to patients and the public. I'm highlighting this as one example, and I'll give you more examples of a cultural problem within medicine.
Boy, howdy, does he. He just lays it all out. Our profession is corrupted to the core. He makes no bones about it. And it is truly evil, with millions of deaths in our wake, unfortunately. And then he talks about the fact that the post-mortem exam of his father revealed what he was afraid it would, and it was the shot. Then he follows up with this.
Then, within the space of a few weeks, around October and November,
2021,
three different sources of information was brought to my attention that made me realize that there was probably a significant problem with the COVID mRNA vaccine. The first, in October 2021, I remember I was giving lectures in Stockholm. I was contacted by a journalist with the Times newspaper who reported to me and said, Dr. Malhotra, we have reports of an unexplained 25% increase in heart attacks in hospitals in Scotland, and asked me what I thought was going on. I explained to her that at that time, with the evidence I knew and my own experience, I said that two likely contributory factors were lockdown stress. We know that when populations undergo severe stress after war, for example, there is an increase in heart attacks and strokes that can last for many years. She asked me whether I thought that there was a contribution. I was surprised when she asked me whether I thought there may be a contribution of the COVID vaccine to these heart attacks. I said to her, a good scientist should never exclude any possibility, but I felt at the time it was unlikely to be related to the COVID vaccine, but we should watch this space and keep our eyes open.
This is very important. So this is in the fall, after his father had died at the end of July that same year, and a very, very measured, professional, empathetic, caring doctor who is doing his job.
A few weeks later, a publication appeared in the journal Circulation, which is considered the highest impact cardiology journal in the United States, that revealed a potentially very strong link between the COVID mRNA vaccines and acceleration in heart attack risk. Very specifically, in several hundred people of middle age, there was a plausible mechanism by use of inflammatory markers in the blood that increased the baseline risk of those people having a heart attack in 5 years from 11% to 25% just within 2 months of having the COVID mRNA vaccines. Of course, this is one bit of data, but even if partially true, that is a huge increase in risk in a very short space of time. And for me now, made me think and link back to why my father may have suffered a cardiac arrest 6 months after having 2 doses of the vaccine. I remember thinking and speaking to a colleague that if this was true, then we were going to see an increase in cardiac arrests, heart attacks, and excess deaths in heavily vaccinated countries for the next few years.
For the next few years, this is his awakening.
Then within a few weeks, I was called up by a whistleblower at a very prestigious British institution. I will name that institution, which I've not done publicly before, as the University of Oxford. This cardiologist explained to me that a group of researchers in his department had accidentally found, through the use of very specialized imaging of the heart, that there was a signal of increased inflammation of the heart arteries, which was there in the vaccinated, but not there in the unvaccinated. The lead researcher of that group had sat down the juniors and had said that we are not going to explore these findings any further because it may affect our funding from the pharmaceutical industry. At that point, with these 3 bits of information, I then felt it was my ethical duty to speak out.
Amen. It was his ethical duty, regardless of his the monies or his reputation amongst those in his profession, but it was his ethical duty. Where has that been the last 4 years? It's certainly been missing. Just harrowing to see how bad we have gone, what hellish road we have gone down to ignore the obvious right in front of us. And then he goes into the fact that the Secretary of State for Health was a guy named Sajid Javid, and he had announced in Parliament that he was going to introduce legislation to ensure that all healthcare workers were mandated to have the COVID vaccine. It was insanity. Right as he's coming to the awareness of this, this guy with the full weight of the government behind him is mandating that the vaccinated, that people in healthcare get vaccinated. And he immediately starts acting out about it and contacting people.
I also received my own personal backlash from these comments, where I was contacted by the Royal College of Physicians, who I had an affiliation with. And they asked me to respond to anonymous complaints from doctors that I was spreading, in quotes, anti-vax disinformation. I felt, with my own knowledge and experience of the healthcare system, that this was a direct response, probably fueled by a combination of willful blindness and institutional corruption. To elaborate a bit further, when I say institutional corruption, I mean that my view was that the complaints were likely being fueled by academics with financial ties to the pharmaceutical industry. I felt very concerned about the potential introduction of the vaccine, the vaccine mandate, and therefore I decided, there were 2 things that I decided to do. The first was I made a phone call to the chairman of the British Medical Association in December 2021. I had a good relationship with him and he respected my opinion, and I spent 2 hours on the phone explaining to him everything that I knew up to that stage about my concerns of the COVID mRNA vaccine. He said to me, "Asim, nobody appears to have critically appraised the evidence on the COVID mRNA vaccine as well as you have from our conversation." He said, "Most of my colleagues are getting their information on the benefits and harms of the vaccine from the BBC. This was replicated by the former chair of the CDC in the United States, Rochelle Walensky, who in an interview later on had said that her initial optimism from the vaccine benefits came from CNN news report. I say this just to emphasize that we should all accept our vulnerabilities to where we receive health information. Even doctors, policymakers, judges, and lawyers are all influenced on the public massively by mainstream media. The chairman of the BMA also agreed with me there was no ethical or scientific justification for mandating the COVID vaccine. He said the BMA also did not support it.
And so here he is getting the, this is the beginning of his testimony, the first 45 minutes or whatever. And we'll come back next week with the following, the rest of it. But the whole system is corrupted. Doctors are getting their news from CNN. If anybody ever thought that CNN was not corrupt or not, they're not a source of good news, accurate news. They have completely been wrong again with the most major catastrophe, I believe, in our country's history, certainly of our lifetimes, and that is the COVID catastrophe that the United States has created, by and large, for the world to have to deal with. And so, very important testimony that he gives. It's just numb. It makes you numb to a degree that you can't explain it, because everything we thought about the virtuous medical industrial complex has revealed itself to be corrupt to the core. And that's what Dr. Mahatra, in his testimony in Helsinki, is explaining. He goes through the story. He was one of the top guys in, it's kind of like Robert Redfield here in the United States, who has explained how he got it wrong on some things. But it's that level of testimony that we are listening to. And we will follow up next week with further evidence that he presents. But once again, thank you for joining us on America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley.